Chapter 39. Now the besieged Judeans, indeed, had a multitude of grain and of all other necessaries, with an exception of salt. But they lacked water. Indeed, because there were no springs within the city, the inhabitants were dependent on rainwater. But in this region, rain rarely, if ever, falls in the summer. And this was precisely the season when they were besieged. The mere idea of thirst filled them with dire despondency. And already, they were vexed, as though water had entirely failed. For I, seeing both the abundance of the city's other necessaries and the courage of its men, also being desirous to prolong the siege beyond Roman expectation, had put them on water rations from the beginning. But this control system appeared to them harder than actual want, and the constraint of their liberty only increased their craving, and they became as limp as though they had already reached the last extremity of thirst. But the Romans were not ignorant of their plight, for from the slopes above, over the wall, they could see the Judeans flocking to one place and having their water rationed out to them. Since their sharpened bolt launchers were able to reach the spot, they did away with a great many of them. And indeed, Vespasianus expected that the water in the cisterns would be exhausted before long, and the city would be reduced to capitulation. But to crush this hope, I directed a number of dripping wet garments to be made, and for them to be hung along the parapets, with the result that the entire wall was suddenly seen streaming with water. The Romans, at the sight of all this water being wasted as a jest by those whom they supposed did not even have enough for themselves to drink, were filled with dismay and consternation. So the Roman general himself, despairing of reducing the place by their lack of supplies, reverted to weapons and strength. Now this was exactly what the Judeans desired. For having given up all hope for themselves in the city, they preferred a death in the war rather than perishing of famine and thirst. However, after this stratagem, I devised yet another to procure myself an abundance of supplies. Leading down to the ravine on the west side, there was a mountain torrent so difficult to traverse that it had been neglected by our enemy's guards. So by this route, I succeeded in sending documents by some of my men to the Judeans outside of the city with whom I desired to communicate. Now, once I had received replies from them, I stocked the city with all necessaries by the same means when its supplies began to fail. I directed them to creep past the guards on all fours and to cover their backs with fleeces, in order that, if they were spied at night. They might be taken for dogs. Eventually, the guards detected the design and blocked the mountain torrent. And when I indeed recognized that the city could not hold out for long, but that my own salvation would be endangered if I remained there, I took counsel with the powerful men about the means of flight. But the multitude discovered my intention, and they crowded around me, imploring me not to abandon them, since they depended on me alone.
For if you remain, you will indeed be the sole hope of the city and salvation, because everyone, since you are with us, will contend with eagerness. But even if capture is in store for us, you will be our sole consolation. But it would be unworthy of you to flee from your enemies, or to desert your friends, or to leap into this winter storm from the vessel on which you had embarked when it was calm. For your departure will sink the city, because no one will have the courage to resist our foes any longer, when the presence of the one who has given us courage is gone.
But suppressing any allusion to my own safety, I assured them that it was in their own interests that I had contemplated leaving. For indeed, my presence in the city could not materially assist them if they were saved, and if they were taken, what end would I serve by perishing with them? But if I were able to get clear of the siege, I would be able to render them the greatest service from outside. For I would promptly both muster the Galileans from the country and, by creating a diversion elsewhere, draw off the Romans from their city. Now I failed to see how my presence at their side could be useful to them in the present circumstances, or have any other effect except to provoke the Romans to press the siege more vigorously than ever, as they attached such great importance to my capture. But if they were informed that I had fled the city, they would considerably relax their ferocity. But they were not persuaded by these words. Instead, the multitude only clung to me more ardently. Accordingly, the little ones and old men and women with infants in their arms all fell down, weeping before me. And they embraced me by my feet. And all of them implored me with lamentations to stay and share their fortune. And I think they did all this, not because they envied my chance of salvation, but instead because they thought of their own. For with me on the spot, they were convinced that no disaster could befall them. Now I indeed suspected that if I yielded, this instance would not go beyond supplication, but that if I opposed their desires, constant watch would be over me. But my determination to abandon them was broken off by pity for their lamentations. So I decided to remain. And making the common despair of the city into a weapon for myself, I said to them,
"Now is the time to begin the battle! When there is no hope of salvation left! Brave it is to prefer renown before life, and by some glorious exploit to ensure in being remembered by our posterity!"
And suiting my actions to my words, I, advancing with my most efficient combatants, both dispersed the guards and penetrated as far as the Romans' encampment. And indeed, we tore up the skin tents under which they were sheltered on the embankment, but set fire to their works. I repeated this both the next day and the day after that, and indefatigably continued the war for a series of days and nights. Now the Romans suffered from these sallies, for they were ashamed to flee before the Judeans. And whenever they put the Judeans to flight, the weight of their weapons impeded them in the pursuit, while the Judeans always performed some mischief before the Romans were able to retaliate, and then took refuge in the city. Indeed, at this, Vespasianus directed his heavy-armed soldiers to shun these attacks and not to grapple with men who were bent on death, saying,
"For nothing is more valiant than despair. But when deprived of an objective, their impetuosity will be extinguished like fire for lack of fuel. Yet truly, it is becoming even for Romans to think of safety as well as victory, since our reason for making war is not necessity. Instead, it is to increase our dominions."
Now from then on, he relied primarily on his Arabian archers and the Syrian slingers, as well as the stone launchers, to repel the Judeans. But the multitude of his artillery also fired without intermission. Now the Judeans, indeed suffering severely by these implements, gave way. But once past the reach of their adversaries' long-range projectiles, they flung themselves furiously on the Romans and fought desperately, without sparing either soul or body. One party after another, relieving their exhausted comrades.